is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. Our guest today is Duke University student Brian Grosso. Brian is a first-year student at Duke University who took a very public stand in opposition to a controversial book chosen for Duke's summer reading assignment. And as a result, Brian found himself in somewhat of a firestorm. NC Family Communications Director Tracy Griggs caught up with Brian between classes recently to find out what motivated him to take this stand and what he's thinking about that decision now that he's had an opportunity to reflect back upon it. Tracy, give us a quick synopsis of what happened here.
As you know, many universities issue a summer reading book for their students to read and be ready to discuss when they come back to school in the fall. It's not unusual for these books to be controversial and generate discussion within the community. Well, this was certainly the case at Duke University this year. The book selection was entitled Fun Home by Allison Bechdel. I haven't read it, but it's said to be written by a syndicated cartoonist and is also said to be based on her home growing up. However, the book reportedly contains sexually explicit drawings that some Duke freshmen judged to be pornographic. Brian Grosso was one that objected to the book and decided not to read it because he said it violated his Christian principles. Not only that, he made the courageous decision to go public with that stand. He posted on Duke's Class of 2019 Facebook page that he was not going to read the book, quote, because of the graphic visual depictions of sexuality. Well, this prompted quite a number of posts on the Facebook page, and the student newspaper immediately picked up the story and ran an article on it. Brian was then asked to do a guest editorial for the Washington Post. So we thought it would be interesting to talk to Brian and find out what motivated him to speak up on this issue when so many other young people just went along with the assignment.
Well, Tracy, we can all understand that it's a tough thing to do. You're coming in as a freshman at a nationally recognized exclusive private university, and for most students, it would be incredibly difficult to take such a public stand as Brian did for their faith right off the bat. Unfortunately, not everyone was very nice in their response to Brian, as I recall.
That's right, John. Some people even questioned openly if Brian even belonged at Duke University because of his stance. He was called narrow-minded, uptight. He was told to grow up. But when you talk to him, he is really very gracious about even the comments that were critical of him. He considers all of this discussion surrounding the book to be an important exercise in free speech and the first steps toward having more civilized conversation in our society as a whole. Interestingly, he talks about how the people who disagreed with him did so in a very public manner. Those, however, who agreed with him often sent him private messages to communicate their support.
Well, and unfortunately, Tracy, this is probably not an isolated incident that we see here, but it really ties in well with an article that we will be publishing in the upcoming issue of our magazine, Family North Carolina. This article, which was written by John Stonestreet with the Colson Center and Eric Smith with Summit Ministries, talks about what motivates millennials, who are young adults age 18 to 34, and how older adults can reach out to this age group. Based on research and social science, we have reason to be concerned about the direction that many in this age group are going, particularly those who consider themselves to be Christians. So it's really encouraging to see individuals like Brian standing up for their faith. So Tracy, let's hear your interview with Brian. I'm interested in seeing what he thinks about his own generation, especially in light of the recent experiences that he had at Duke University.
Thanks, John. We had a long conversation, but I pulled some excerpts from that discussion. We began with what happened when he first posted his intentions to not read the book on the Class of 2019 Facebook page.
After I first posted on the Facebook page, there were probably 50 or 60 comments just on that post. You know, the Duke Chronicle contacted me almost immediately asking me to do an article about it. There really was a mix of positive and negative reactions. But generally, those who had negative reactions posted publicly on the Facebook page, and those who had positive reactions messaged me privately and thanked me for my post and said they had similar beliefs. And I thought that was a really interesting kind of dynamic that people weren't willing to speak up what they thought and what they believed on the Facebook page in front of everyone. I was criticized and still being criticized by many for being closed-minded, bigoted, and had people message me saying things like, you've grown up in a religious bubble and college is about expanding your horizons, and how can you consider yourself a Duke student if you're so closed-minded, things like that. But again, also very positive things. There were no academic consequences. And really, after I wrote the op-ed for the Washington Post, the atmosphere kind of changed in my favor, because a lot of people kind of, I think, even people who disagree with me strongly, really kind of acknowledged my right to believe what I believe after they read that. And that's the good thing about Duke, is it is a very open-minded campus in general. They do promote civil discussion and healthy exchange of ideas.
Okay. If you had to do it over again, would you handle it the same way?
I think I absolutely would. There are certain times and certain interviews and articles where I think my language could be more precise. Even in my op-ed for the Washington Post, I think I could have articulated some things better, but as far as standing up for what I believe in and being willing to live publicly consistent with what I believe in, then absolutely, I wouldn't take anything back. And I think it's a conversation that needs to be had on this campus. There's a lot of Christians on campus, Mormons on campus, and conservative Muslims on campus. There's really just this, I think, kind of growing stigma against conservative people who are religious in general. And I think that the conversation needed to be had, that, you know, ideas about the value of sexual purity need to be respected as much as other ideas. And by respected, I mean, there should truly be freedom of speech on this campus. So LGBT clubs should have the right to speak up about their cause as much as conservative organizations. And I truly believe that. I had lunch the other day with a friend of mine who considers himself Muslim, and he talks with me a lot. He's a sophomore now, about how Duke is just very pro-sex in general, and the culture is just against conservative religious ideals.
So why do you suppose you had the courage to speak up in this way when others did not? What was it about your philosophy, faith, upbringing, whatever, that influenced you and to be able to speak up in this way?
Two main things. Both are deeply connected to my faith in God and my Christian faith. The primary source of courage, I guess you could say, is really my belief in God's presence and his promises. And I truly believe that coming to this campus, even if I do speak up, that I won't be alone. And so that's kind of, I think, the fear that hinders a lot of people from articulating their thoughts and beliefs in a public place, especially at Duke, where you can receive a lot of intellectual criticism. But I do truly believe on a spiritual and personal and intimate level that I won't be alone on this campus. And I would say the second one is really my community at my hometown. I had a really strong Christian community. I had a very strong, supportive family. And that support that I received from those communities was really what gave me the comfort and the courage to say, you know, this is what I believe. It's not irrational. It's not dumb. And at the end of the day, if some people don't like me, then I will still have that community. I will still have the support of my close Christian community and my close family.
Okay. Why do you think it's important for young people to engage the culture around them and be willing to speak up when they don't agree?
As far as specifically Christians speaking out, our culture is changing rapidly, faster than any other time, it seems like, in American history. And it's changing radically, especially in regards to sex and sexuality and the dismantling of conservative values and ideals. And for Christians who believe, you know, really believe what they believe about God and about what honors him, there's a necessity, a moral necessity in speaking out. Speaking out in faith and what God promises, and speaking out in courage that you're not going to be alone and that God does provide strength.
What do you think is holding many young people back from truly engaging the culture around them in an impactful way?
It's that fear of isolation and just that incredible pressure to conform, and it's never been more real at any place that I've been to than Duke. It's such a competitive environment, and people, they want to do more than fit in. They want to thrive. They want to win, which is, you know, has a healthy place. But I guess for people at Duke specifically, or these kind of people, it's that desire to do well and to fit in. But I think people who don't have those strong communities to support them, really hindering young people from speaking up. So, you know, if you break the social or the family structure, then people, I think, will be less likely to speak out about their beliefs because they don't have that support in that community that is unconditional.
What kind of encouragement would you have for them to be able to start building that so that they can have an impact?
I would say, first of all, be intentional about seeking it out. Don't give in to despair and hopelessness and thinking that there's not people like you, because there are people like you. There are all kinds of people in the world. And really, when you're intentional about seeking out community and persistent in seeking out community, you'll find community. And that's really what I have found. And if the person's a Christian, then pray for it, you know, and trust God's faithfulness to provide community and support. And in addition to that, if you're a Christian, then just rest in God's promise of his presence. And remember that you're not alone. Even if there's no human being standing beside you, you know, the creator of the universe is with you. And so rest in that and let yourself gather strength from that truth.
Well, Tracy, what a great testimony and what a great example Brian is for other young adults to speak truth into our culture. As I mentioned, we talk about millennials in an upcoming article in our magazine, Family North Carolina. Now, as we know, millennials are expected to pass baby boomers in 2015 to become the largest age group in the United States. What else did we learn about millennials in this article?
Well, there are a lot of really interesting statistics in the article, but more than that, they give us some real practical information on how to reach out to millennials. Only 56% of millennials self-identify as Christians. Now, that's significantly lower than the 70% of the U.S. adult population who do so. The Pew Research Center also reports that more than a third of adults in the millennial generation now say they have no religion at all. And 39% of millennials say they have left evangelicalism. They believe in God on their own terms as a supreme being that desires the best for them and does not demand anything of them and pretty much leaves them alone. So it's a real interesting new way of looking at Christianity, and certainly a way that could have effects on the way that they look at a lot of our social issues that we're so concerned about here at NC Family.
Well, I think that's very true, because these statistics aren't just numbers. They represent the real lives of our youth, our young adults, and our future. And so it is something that we are all very interested in, and it's important that we learn and take seriously how we can best relate to them. And Tracy, thanks so much for this great interview with Brian. We applaud him for the stand that he has taken. We encourage other young adults to take opportunities to represent their faith, to stand for their faith, because they can, as Brian has, be a great example to others around them. And we definitely want to encourage our listeners to keep an eye out for our upcoming edition of Family North Carolina Magazine, which will be hitting their mailboxes around the end of October. If you are a listener and you're currently not on our mailing list to receive our magazine, please sign up to receive our magazine on our website at www.ncfamily.org. Again, that's ncfamily.org. And with that, Tracy, I want to thank you so much for your time and for the interview that you did with Brian. Again, we just applaud him and encourage other folks to take a stand.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.